welcome to the M&A Zing, the show for acquisition entrepreneurs, search funders and whole co-builders across the UK and Europe. Each week we dive into the real world stories, strategies and challenges behind buying and building SMBs. Whether you're searching for your first deal or running a growing group of companies, this is your space to learn, share and get inspired. This week, I'm joined by Rachel Murphy, CEO and founder of The Grafter, who has previously exited her two prior companies, Progressus and Different, as well as having delivered digital transformations for several public sector institutions and large corporations, and now is supporting healthcare, professional services and SaaS companies on their growth, financing and exit journeys. So welcome, Rach. Lovely to have you with us.
Hey, Gareth. Thank you for the intro. I do sound more impressive than I think. But absolutely delighted to be here, mate. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, no, delighted. And looking forward to getting stuck into hearing more about your own journey and what you're doing to help others on theirs now. Just normally what we do at this point is dive into a little bit of news around the search fund and acquisition entrepreneur space. And so just to bring our listeners up to speed on what's happened this week, we've had a search fund launch in Switzerland this week, Ambro Capital, which is founded by Luca Hani and seeks to acquire and operate one exceptional SME in Switzerland or southern Germany. And parallel to that, we've also seen the launch of a new search fund investor. This is Searchright Capital Partners out of the Netherlands, led by Joris Bandrecht, Eric Rolfson and Robert Dukas. They are backing acquisition entrepreneurs in the Dutch, German and Italian markets, which is fantastic to see a new capital partner coming out of the Netherlands. So evolving space, and we wish both searchers and investors the best of success. So into our main feature for this week, you are about to be spoiled, listeners and viewers, by a whistle-stop journey through the formidable Rach Murphy's career. Rach, why don't you start us off with the inevitable journey to here kind of question. Tell us a bit about your previous career and experience, if you don't mind.
Yeah, very happy to. So my background, Gareth, is as you mentioned, I've built and sold a couple of businesses. If I'm totally honest, I think I've always been pretty unemployable, and I'm very proud of that fact. As I left school, I went contracting way before it was trendy to do that, and that really set the stall out for my career. I didn't want a boss any more then than I do now, and I got very lucky and I worked very hard and have worked for a number of large corporates. So I ran the services business for Kier, the construction company, many years ago, for Kelway, IT, reseller, outsourcer, and then did, as you'd mentioned, a number of large scale transformation roles, whether it was people, process or tech, across central government. So we're CIO for Department for Education and then led patient-facing transformation of the NHS. And that involved launching the NHS app and NHS.UK, so the digital front door to consuming patient-facing services. So big love affair with healthcare. Both companies that I've built and sold have been in healthcare to date. And as I guess, get more current, after I sold the last business in 2020, you know, if you're a healthcare consultancy in a pandemic, it doesn't actually get any better. Although I'd like to caveat that I'm not responsible for COVID, but it, you know, in all seriousness, you know, we wrote probably an extra $750,000 that we probably wouldn't have done had it not been a pandemic, and we were going through a sales process at that time. So that's just a little bit of background.
Before we bring us up to date on the Grafter, and thank you so much for sharing what you just did, the exit of Different during the sort of early days of the pandemic, did that have a tangible impact on your sale value? I mean, at that moment, I imagine there was a gold rush into healthcare and health tech. If you were mid-deal when it was all kicking off, how did that affect you?
So it went through the roof, is the honest answer. I don't think that we were quite at the ultimate high. I think that was probably 2021, because we sold right in the middle of the drama. I mean, we sold middle of 2020. But there's no denying it helped, because we wrote business. You know, we were building the national service for the UK for COVID home testing, and that project came left field, as did a few others. And so it definitely was a contributing factor in achieving a, you know, we had an 8x multiple, which is widely shared. Very widely, actually, from my social media, but is in the public domain, I think, is what normal people say.
That's always good. That's a nice transparent process. But I think you sold to Panoply, right? Who would have had to declare some stuff anyway, I imagine.
That's it. So it was all published in the FT because they were a listed business, and so it was all very much in the public domain.
So tell us a bit about what you did after recovering from selling your second business. You're now into a new era, chapter three. A quick sort of summary of that before we delve a bit deeper.
Yeah, of course. So post selling the business, I'd earn out for an 18-month period. I found that tricky. Going back to earlier comments about being unemployable and pretty unmanageable. So I found that hard. And working for a listed business and a much larger entity, all of it I found tricky. And post earnout, I didn't want to dive straight into building another business. I really wanted to take a little bit of time and work out what it was I fancied doing. And how that looked for me is that also coincided with what was going on in Ukraine. So myself and a couple of other entrepreneurs raised about 50 grand and went into Ukraine a couple of times to help out, buying kit for initially families and then not the secret service, the special service or something in Ukraine. Yeah, I mean, it was random. And I have no military experience, no medical, and I'm not actually that practical. However, pretty good at raising money and convincing people to get behind it. So it was all a bit random. We helped out. We managed to stay alive and not cause too much drama. So that was good. And then I went on a bit of a mad one and wanted to really understand my kind of purpose in the world and did a psychedelic retreat, which is as it sounds.
Ayahuasca?
No, it wasn't actually. No, I'm not that ballsy. I'm sure that that is in my future. But
oh, well, we'll do it together. I want to meet my maker at some point and get connected to the quantum forces. So
we'll get a two for one sorted, dude. It was psilocybin. It was an amazing experience, and it was very powerful without sounding too hippie. But also I knew I wanted to take a bit of time and just decompress. I was really burnt out after the earn out bit. And I probably jumped back in, about 6 months later and did some work in the healthcare space for a business that I am a shareholder in. So I was a non-exec and jumped in and helped them grow the business, did a very active NED role and then decided to take the learning from selling the last couple of businesses and build a service that I don't believe anybody else has, which is about helping an entrepreneur to maximize the value of their business prior to an exit. It was a little masochistic in wanting to go all the way back and build a service and take it to market myself again. But it was a good learning experience because, you know what it's like, you do get a bit soft when you've been, you know, in these businesses that grow. And I wanted to see, could I actually put a proper shift in again?
Yeah, it's a muscle, isn't it? It's a muscle we have to keep toning and going back and doing. And I'm equally masochistic about it. So
I mean, good company.
Indeed. So You mentioned you had a sort of entrepreneurial itch to scratch, and that you wanted to, you know, be your own boss, and found yourself unemployable. But that was business one, which you exited. Business two, different. You acquired your way into that, I think. As you imagine, a lot of our audience are acquisition entrepreneurs. So tell us a little bit about how that came to pass.
You're absolutely right. It was an acquisition. So Different was a recruitment company at that time, wasn't even called Different, it was called Bluefire. And I was mates with the founder of that business. And over the years, we talked about doing something together, and it was never the right time. But also I knew that I wanted to build something that was user-centered, and I really wanted to kind of own the outcome. From designing all the way through to building the service. I didn't have a burning desire to run those services after that. But when I pitched Steve, I said to him, listen, you know, if you give us 50% of the equity in the business, I'll jump in and we will sell this thing in 5 years, and we'll sell it for a shitload more than you can sell the recruitment company for right now, but we'll also have a much heftier margin.
I want to pause on that and drill down a little bit deeper, because that is epic.
Of course.
Lots of acquisition entrepreneurs think about how they can structure a deal that it's in the interest of the seller, that, you know, persuade them to come on this journey, take the growth equity pill on the basis that what you give up today to let me in is going to pay you back massively on the collective exit that we're going to get by growing this together. And almost to the day, you managed to deliver Steve an exit by reshaping his business, which became your collective business. What did you encounter, any resistance from Steve, or did he embrace that idea wholeheartedly from day one?
Yeah, there was no resistance from him. We talked about this on and off for years. So I think there was no resistance, because I'm not sure he fully understood what it meant to move from recruitment to an outcome-based business. And what did happen was that the business was transformed beyond recognition. And so therefore, it became difficult for him to play a role in the business. But I would also caveat that by saying, Gareth, I'm probably quite hard work to sit alongside as a business partner. I remember, conversations with him where I think in the end his attitude was like, well, Rachel's going to do it anyway, so I'll just get out of her way. And I do own 50% of the business, so why would I try and wrestle for some of this? Because she's going to make it happen. All words to that effect.
That's great. And it just demonstrates, it's a lovely case study in that growth equity piece, where it's like, you know, come along with me. I'll see you right. And, you know, what you're giving up today at today's enterprise value is going to be, pale into insignificance by contrast to what I'm going to generate for you. I think, you know, entrepreneurs should take heed of that advice, that, you know, I assume that your acquisition was through services, through the sort of the time and the effort and the sweat and the years that you put into the business, rather than having to leverage the business or, you know, send Steve some cash.
You're absolutely right. So and he had done, you know, to be fair to him, there's and doing that very first early startup bit from zero to a mill, you know, it's hard yards. You've got no trading history. You know, there's bloody payday loans. There's all manner of shit that has to go on. Now, I was never really up for that aspect. I've probably learned that one this time round with a grafter. But you're a bit older, you're a bit wiser, and you know your way around this stuff. But he had, he put a lot of kind of graft into it. But as we transform that business from recruitment and supplying people to owning the risk and owning the outcome, it was a fundamentally different business. And by his own admission, it wasn't one that he particularly recognized, but it was 4.5 years to the day. There was a lot of luck involved.
Certainly, it wouldn't have just fallen in your lap. You had to go out and get it, I would argue.
We had a lot of chasing around. But to be fair, you know, once I was in, it was very clear. You know, we had the framework set up. So it was easy for me. I'd sat the other side of the fence for a long period of time. It was relatively easy for me to sell the first outcome. Once we'd got the first outcome in and we'd then, you know, delivered on that, we were away to the races. So it was game on.
Nice. So you sensibly didn't do the 0-1 thing the second time around. You'd been that path. Different. You got into at a stage of maturity. Obviously, had to go through the whole pivot and the sort of regeneration of the business, if you like. But I'm interested in, having gone through that exit journey the first time around, what you did differently the second time around. If you can speak to, you know, being prepared for the exit that 4.5 years later after coming in and taking the equity.
So I was very, very prepared for the exit because I went into different with exit in mind, and we were very vocal. You know, the strategy was clear right from the outset. So we had, within 2.5 years, we had a full sale pack ready, and we partnered with our biggest competitors a lot of the time. And we didn't do that because we had a burning desire to be working with them. So we knew that we were going to be acquired within the industry. And we had worked with, of the three companies that offered to buy us, we'd worked with all of them, and we'd worked with companies that they had acquired as well. We were very much a known quantity in that respect, but it was our preparedness in way of, you know, we when I sold the business, we were just shy of 9 million turnover. We had about 65 permanent staff, probably about 100 in total with interns. But we were much more evolved in preparedness for an exit than a business of our size should have been. And that was purely experience of you know, been through it many, many years before. And my father has done a lot in the sort of private equity and acquisition space, and so I think
then Rach, it's in the, that discipline's built in, but I guess
I'm not sure he would say there's any discipline built in actually, Gareth, but I understand.
Fathers never do.
I understand where you're going with that, mate.
Yes, well, I was trying. It was pretty tenuous, but thank you for for sticking with me on that one. In preparing the business, I assume you, and correct me if I'm wrong, or add color if you can, you were running the business with a view to it being in good order so that if somebody did want to look at the books and look at the processes and stuff, you could have said, look, here's the keys. If you hit my number, you know, it's ready.
I think that makes it sound a bit cleaner than it was. And the reason I say that is we had a playbook for how we deliver for clients. So we were well on top of that. We managed our utilization within an inch of our lives. You know, from a financial perspective, we were really clear about what we were doing and how we were doing it. I think the bit that I would say, though, is when I went through DD for the acquisition of Different, I learned about the business from a financial perspective because the lenses are different. So, you know, I knew my business inside out and back to front, but I'd never looked at it in the way that, you know, someone who's conducting financial DD would. And so that was still a learning curve for me. So was it ready to go? I'd say it was 85% ready to go, which is probably a hell of a lot further along the line than most would be.
Well, we can both speak to that from experience that is tended to be further along than most businesses would be. But fail to plan to fail, isn't it really? And in that sense, you want to be running your business like somebody could come along and make you an offer you can't refuse, and you don't have to put the business in good order in order to accept the offer.
Yeah, and I think that's the really interesting bit is when you've done it a couple of times, you inherently do run it a different way. And, you know the processes, and in this world, you know, we would have this conversation internally yesterday, but even around automation of some of this stuff, it's like that, you know, why? It's not only is it documented, but it's like, well, why is there manual involvement in some of this? And so it's getting easier and easier is what
I mean. Documenting was the first vanguard, but now it's automating. why haven't you documented is now that why haven't you automated with all of the LLM and if this then that kind of back office automation stuff that now exists. We can build some really lean, scalable businesses without having to have an army of people, which is tremendous. And that's the kind of new mentality, I guess, that if you're setting out to build today, you build with that premise: clean accounts and lean workforce, and highly processified.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, and I think that's also why we're going to see a huge amount of what I would call not quite a solopreneur. There'll be a small team around it, but there'll be a heavy personal brand around some of this, a very small team. But I can foresee that we're going to have businesses that are generating millions with a very, very small team of staff. And that, you know, that's going to look distinctly different to how things have in the last 5 years. So, interesting times ahead.
Super exciting times ahead, yeah. And opportunities for value creation for people that are acquiring businesses and people that are forming businesses. So let's bring it back up to date and talk about the Grafter, because you mentioned that you're mission-driven now and that you are out there supporting these healthcare professional services and SaaS founders as they navigate the same waters that you have previously done. How has that mission evolved, crystallized, and developed since you formed the Grafter a couple of years ago?
So it's evolved with, I think there's a couple of areas. So as a business, we have an underlying service, which is Grow, Raise, Exit. And that as a product and service has evolved. We've now taken 30 companies through that. And we now have 9 exiteers from lots of different sectors who have been trained and delivered the program to different clients. So there's been a lot of evolution on the look and feel of that service. We have also built out a diagnostic tool up front that actually assesses the maturity of a business. And before we do any engagement with any client at all, we do that. That's the first port of call, because we can't really do anything properly, anything data driven, without having that assessment. And I guess the only other bit that we continue to do that's outside of the Grow, Raise, Exit is market access stuff in certain areas, because we have deep domain knowledge in healthcare and in some areas of PS. So it makes, that's PS, by the way, not BS. It makes sense for, we've probably got some expertise in that as well, makes sense for us to, do some of that. And as a business, I think probably one of the biggest shifts that we've seen over the last couple of years is a real uptake and interest around the idea of buying and acquiring businesses. So that's not something that we offer as part of the Grow, Raise, Exit at the minute. However, the cohort that we're bringing on next week, we have interest in that cohort around acquisition. And so I think it's going to become, we will need to think about how we help service, you know, directly and indirectly through partners, that side of things. And I think the other bit is, without going off on a political rant, the landscape around opportunity, national insurance, taxes, you know, are entrepreneurs wanting to continue doing business here, or are they exploring different locations? They're the bits that I think, and, you know, without even getting involved with the wider economic situation and other activities, it's fair to say it is a lively market right now.
It certainly is. And all those factors that you speak to there are motivators for selling. So amongst founders or owners whose races potentially run, they've reached a point in life where they want to pass on the baton, you know, all these additional tax raids and legislative burdens that have come from our new esteemed leaders are going to cause that mindset shift. But we already had an abundance of companies that needed to sell just purely because of the age of ownership. So it is a buyer's market, and I think, you know, it's a consequence to an extent of the stage and phase of the businesses that you're working with, that they're thinking in terms of corporate development, acquisition, growth through buying other businesses, because those are how you get the big strides forward, right, in sort of increasingly mature markets. So it doesn't surprise me. It's also, you know, we've now got stabilizing and gradually reducing interest rates. You know, companies that are cash generative should be using their balance sheets to create leverage that they can then use to, you know, buy competitors or do some kind of horizontal or vertical acquisitions. So I'm really pleased to hear that you're seeing that playing out in the cohorts of companies that you deal with. You mentioned a term there, which seems very unique to the graft, and I want to drill in a bit further. Exiteers. Tell us a little bit about your army of exiteers.
So credit where credit's due. The term exiteer actually comes from my old man who trademarked the name for me. I think it's still trademarked in his name, actually, which will be a challenge for us in the future, I'm sure. It was a term he came up with and I just absolutely loved it. And how we define an exiteer is... it's somebody who has built and sold at least two businesses in that area, in their respective domain. My background happens to be professional services in healthcare, and we have exiteers who we initially focus purely on healthcare, and then professional services more recently opened up from a SaaS perspective as well. It's about getting coverage in different sectors, but also it's a bit like, you're mapping and matching the founder with the exiteer. And so just because, you know, I do know healthcare well, there's lots of area of healthcare that aren't necessarily in my niche. So, my personality, my style may not be the right fit for some founders. And so we do a bit of a matching exercise across the companies that are coming on. And the other interesting bit we've seen more recently is not just the founder joining the program. So we've got, like a CFO will join as well. And or a chief operating officer. It's interesting, managing a 3-to-1 around some of that kind of coaching and consultancy work. But it's really about doing that matchmaking. The exiteer term is defined as, you've got a couple of them under your belt and you know what you're talking about, but equally all of the exiteers that deliver Grow, Raise, Exit have been trained by me on the program that I've built, and it's pretty intensive. We've just updated the program, so it's pretty intensive. 22 modules, it might be 27 actually, 22 I think, and we've also included a brand new module around life and legacy. And the reason we've done that is not because we want to encourage everyone off onto a psychedelic retreat, but because we recognize that a lot of the time people haven't asked themselves some of the fundamental questions about why are they actually doing this in the first place. And so as you go through the process of, creating an event, be it raising or exiting, you're then in a bit of a lull around, your identity and your connection and who are you. And so a lot of that is preparing people for what that looks and feels like, but also allowing them the space to have that conversation. I don't know about you, Gareth, but there's plenty of my mates that come from every conceivable walk of life, and me ringing up saying, I'm feeling a bit tearful after I've had an 8-figure exit is likely to have the phone put down.
Yes, first world problem. Founders go through a real emotional roller coaster, right? And no one really prepares you for how you're going to feel post parting company with, you know, your baby, if you like. It is almost like postpartum in some sense, if it isn't PTSD in the process. But it really sounds to me that there's a differentiating feature here. You talked about coaching and consulting, and obviously that, you know, that proliferates. But where the grafter seems to have a unique angle is on understanding the sort of the psychology of the founder throughout that entire journey, and almost emotionally and mentally helping them prepare for these different milestones along that path.
No, I'd wholeheartedly agree. One of the team is a psychologist, and it's interesting because the chap that actually coached me after I sold Different is now working for the business as well. And so I think it's incredibly important. And that, yeah, there's no denying, you know, you build things to solve problems that you've had yourself, don't you? So there's first-hand experience.
Can you speak to the sort of psychology of the seller? I think it would help, you know, our audience is a lot of acquisition entrepreneurs who may not have been in the same shoes that we've been in previously and having been on that side of the table. Can you speak to the sort of psychology that maybe you recall going through, or what you see your participants in the Grow Raise Exit program go through as they near the sort of the end game?
Panic. Nervousness. Do I want to go ahead with this? It is my baby. I don't know how I'm going to feel. And it's a, you know, I think as founders, we are wired slightly differently. And I said, you know, I mean that as a positive. But also as you start to prepare to hand something over, you've put blood, sweat and tears into, for whatever period of time, it is really unnerving, that, you know, disassociation from the identity that you've created. And so, you know, I remember on the transaction for Different, we had some really heated debates on the run up with the acquirer around things, and it wasn't so much that they were being tricky, they were a little, but it was more my emotional state. You know, it was very it pushed a lot of buttons, I think, going through that process, and having somebody sit alongside me who had been through that, not a lawyer, not corporate finance, they were definitely needed, but not for that bit. That's the bit that I felt strongly we needed to build from a grafter perspective, is being able to truly empathize with exactly what they're going through.
That's really revealing and actually quite reassuring to some extent, because there's so much frustration that goes on the buy side about deals that seem to get to the sort of the 11th hour and then for inexplicable reasons kind of dissipate. And often it's, you know, it feels like the seller is having a, you know, change of heart, or is it potentially sometimes being labeled as being unreasonable or having unreasonable expectations. But, you know, you have to walk a mile in the shoes of the seller to understand that emotional roller coaster that they're going through and that worry and concern about what's next. And, you know, having, you know, looking behind the veil and thinking, my God, what am I going to do without this presence in my life? And I don't think we give them enough credit for that. If there's a way of being able to qualify that going in before getting them around the table and wasting a lot of money on the professional services, then, you know, we're all ears.
But I think that emotional readiness is a really important part. Actually, are you ready to step away, hand this over? And that is where we spend quite a lot of our time. And it's not just at the planning for exit. It's the same if they're taking money in and they're suddenly going to have investors sitting at the table, calling some shots, and driving some behavior and assembling the board that feels different to how it's felt before. All of that, I think. And, you know, even on the growth side, you know, I did a video about this today, but, you know, businesses get to a certain level. We tend to work with businesses that are doing a million turnover plus. But you get to that point, and then I think there's also a panic around, have I got product market fit? You know, how do I stay on top of lead gen, marketing, you know, the changes, as we talked about before we started recording, but AI and all of this is coming so thick and fast. I think we could all be out of date in a matter of weeks unless we are constantly trying to stay on top of this stuff.
Yep, change or die. I think that's a very real threat right now. As an additional one, alongside your, you know, market forces, competitors, staff, finance, you know, economic, macroeconomic, geopolitical. Yeah, it's not an easy time to be an entrepreneur, is it?
No.
So on that note, within the Grafter, what would you say your biggest challenge is right now that you would like to meet or overcome?
I think it's the same challenge that plenty of businesses have. And it's about marketing qualified, sales qualified leads, getting us in front of the right people to translate that to business. The service is, I mean, this is a, I would say this isn't meant as arrogant, but I've just rewritten the thing, so it will come across that way. The service is exceptional. And I'm very proud of it, and it has helped a lot of businesses, and it will continue to help a lot of founders and businesses. But it's the age-old thing. Back to what I've just said, things are moving so fast. We had a brilliant debate the other day about how do, you know, the SEO equivalent of AI tooling, and how do we appear higher up the rankings? And this is stuff that isn't even being, you know, barely being thought about yet, and we've got to consider it. And as a small business and a bootstrap business, I can assure you the marketing budget for these activities is lightweight, and so therefore, you know, it's making sure that we get in front of enough of the right people in our ICP. And I would lay money on the fact that's probably the biggest challenge for plenty of businesses.
Many businesses, yeah.
Yeah.
Where you're particularly serving a niche well, and you've got, there is an ideal customer profile, and they're not profligate, they're not there in abundance. You really need to pick the ones that you can add some great value to. That's the gold. And there's a lot of customer acquisition cost that goes towards finding them and converting them, isn't there? In every business. But glad to know that you're mortal and going through the same as we, the rest of us.
Well, it's probably my favourite topic of conversation, Gareth. Maybe we do it better than some. I still think there's room for improvement, but then, you know, I'm a reasonably hard taskmaster. There will always be room for improvement.
Let's look into that, because we'll take a little kind of journey back and then a journey forward to the future. But like, if you could do anything differently, going back and looking at the journey that you trod, like what would it be, if anything?
That's a really good question, and I'm not sure my answer's in a business context, Gareth, because what prompted there was not a business response, hence the smile. I think it's more about being me sooner, stepping into me, embracing me, being totally authentic, and I would say, you know, I've been this way for a number of years. But I think it would have been, you know, just some of that, accept yourself a bit more, a bit sooner, and don't give yourself quite as much of a hard time. I think it's...
We do on, while we're trying to climb the greasy pole, we do. We're our own worst critics. I think that's in the wiring. But you reach a point of maturity, I think, where you become at peace with yourself and you get out of your own way in that sense. And yes, it's so much more productive, isn't it?
So much more productive, and also recognition. I can't actually control very much. And so trying to is very counterproductive, a lot of waste of my time and energy. This really does, we're heading into hippie territory here. But you know, if it's meant for, it will come. And I think there's probably a little bit, that would have been a more comfortable journey at times, I think, learning that lesson a bit sooner.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. And then looking ahead, let's say 12 months time, where would you hope the Grafter is at?
I would like the grafter to be in a different geographical location. I'd like us to, we're exploring conversations with a couple of companies in the US. I would like us to have a service offering in a different location. I think that would be very exciting. And more of the same, I guess. We're working with some exceptional clients. We've got a very well publicised no wanker policy, and we're proud of that fact. And what I mean by that is we work with people that we'd actually want to spend time with outside of work, and that is incredibly it's incredibly powerful, but also it's really fulfilling because we genuinely want to get cracking results for the people that we're working with, and so more of the same is the honest answer, mate. I'd like, the leads flying in every minute, but I don't think you're offering me three wishes here. I'm into my little Aladdin's lamp at the minute.
Yeah, no, a genie I am not, unfortunately, but I certainly believe that what you've got as a recipe at The Grafter can cross borders and, emerge in other geographies, and I sincerely hope that that happens. I can also speak to the benefit of the No Wanker policy, because you put together a wonderful community full of really good souls who help each other out, and that in itself is magical.
Yeah, I agree, and I, right at the start of The Grafter, I said to the team many times over, I suspect we will do amazing things as a business, but I think the community will stand in its own merit and in its own right in short order, and will almost run alongside. And there's real power in that, there's probably 100, 120 entrepreneurs, and if it's not helping people find jobs or, brokering contacts between, or someone's looking for investment. And yeah, I do think community is very much at the heart of where we're all going to be heading to.
Yeah, no, it's a powerful strength. And if entrepreneurs wanted to join that community or speak to you about the Grow, Raise and Exit program, how might one get in contact with you?
So my smiling face is plastered on social media on a regular basis, but best bet is through LinkedIn. Or the website is www.thegrafter.com. Either way, but yeah, I'm an avid user of everything in the social sphere.
Yes, you are indeed prolific. And, I don't know where you get the additional hours in the day to be everywhere all at once.
Yes, everyone wonders that, Gareth.
Indeed, I think it's just a very good team. Rach, thank you so much. It's been enlightening. I have been greatly motivated by hearing your story, as I'm sure many of our listeners have. And we are honoured to have you as a big supporter and proponent of what we're doing at BizCrunch. So thank you again. Have you got any closing parting thoughts that you want to share with the listeners and viewers?
Yes, or any calls to action? I do, actually. I have one, which is, if we've got any of the Labour government listening into this discussion, then, a very clear, and I'm not messing around, but a call to action around a scheme not dissimilar to the SBA in the US would be very much welcomed, because if we don't do something creative for entrepreneurs over here, then I do fear that more will be heading to sunnier climates. I just think that would be a real more than a shame. So if Rachel Reeves is listening in, then I'm sure we can get a very large group down to number 10 or number 11 for a discussion around how we can bring that SBA loan scheme to the UK.
Fabulous rallying call to action. And I sincerely hope Rachel Reeves is listening, not least because it would significantly increase the...
We need to tag her in, mate, so that has to happen.
There we are. Okay, I shall instruct my team accordingly. Thank you, Rach, so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And yes, we wish you well on the Grafter journey. You've already created gold from two previous projects, and I know you will do the same again for others this time around. So thank you, and thank you to our listeners. Until next week, do keep on crunching.